everyone. I'm Jensine Bard, and welcome to Testimony, where truth is told, lives are changed, and hope is given. Revelation 12:11 tells us that we overcome by the blood of the Lamb and the word of our testimony, a testimony of your story for His glory. He is a New York Times best-selling author, having penned the hugely successful and prophetic The Last Jihad, The Last Days, The Ezekiel Option, The Copper Scroll, Epicenter, Inside the Revolution, The 12th Imam, and his latest, which we will talk about shortly, The Tehran Initiative, a political thriller ripped from today's headlines, and if they are not there yet, they soon will be, if past history is any indicator. He has worked with some of the world's most influential leaders, including Steve Forbes, Rush Limbaugh, Nathan Sharansky, and Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, and has himself been called a modern-day Nostradamus, though he would contend it, his biblical roots as an evangelical Christian that give weight to much of what is written in his award-winning and best-selling books, both as a warning and a call to action for those who have ears to hear. Once a political columnist for World Magazine, he now writes commentaries for the National Review, as well as weekly email updates known as Flash Traffic for business and political leaders. A front-page Sunday New York Times profile called him, quote, a force in the Capitol, and he has received further commendation from the Washington Times, the Jerusalem Post, with interviews on ABC's Nightline, CNN, Fox News Channel, The History Channel, MSNBC, Glenn Beck, The Rush Limbaugh Show, Sean Hannity Show, and Christian Broadcasting Network. And if this weren't enough, ladies and gentlemen, my next guest is also founder of the Joshua Fund, a nonprofit organization helping and equipping those in need from the ravages of terrorism in his biblical homeland of Israel. Would you welcome with me today in part one of my two-part conversation from his offices in Washington, D.C., author, political strategist, philanthropist, and my honored guest, Mr. Joel C. Rosenberg. Joel, welcome to Testimony.
It's great to be here. Thank you so much.
Well, Joe, thank you for being with us. I want to personally thank you for being with us today. You're just released the Tehran Initiative. Has just hit number 9 on the New York Times bestsellers list and is sure to pass that mark if it hasn't already. It's a great read. And would you say a prophetic one based on your last writings?
Well, I don't want to call it prophetic in the sense that I have some, you know, special insight that's supernatural in that sense. But there's no question that I'm trying to write political thrillers that are realistic and that could give us a sense of what could happen in the future, not necessarily what definitely will happen. Let me give you an example. So the new novel, The Tehran Initiative, it's fiction. It's a novel. It's a political thriller. I made it up. I began it about a year ago. But as The Tehran Initiative begins, it begins with an Iranian terror plot to kill Americans, Arabs, and Israelis on American soil. Now, when I began writing this book, this had never happened in American history. The Iranians have certainly declared war on the United States back in 1979, took Americans hostage, and since then have been killing Americans with terrorist attacks in Beirut, Lebanon, at the Khobar Towers in Saudi Arabia, in Iraq, in Afghanistan. But we'd never seen the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, the main terrorist apparatus of Iran, actually try to launch attacks inside America's borders, to my knowledge. But I believed, based on the trajectory of Iran's actions and rhetoric, that this was increasingly a real possibility. And that's why I began this new novel, The Tehran Initiative, with an Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps plot to attack here in the United States. Now, in the novel, the focus is New York City. It turns out, in reality, the Revolutionary Guard Corps was planning an attack in Washington, D.C.
Right.
In my novel, the attack is partially successful, partially foiled. In reality, fortunately, the attack was completely foiled. So, but what this tells us is Iran, its leaders do not see the United States as strong. They do not see a deterrence towards hitting us here in our nation. And it, what I feared could happen, and one of the reasons I wrote the Tehran Initiative, is in fact, you know, coming to pass. And this is all the prelude to the worst case scenario, Iran getting nuclear weapons.
Which leads me to my next question, Joel. Why do you think President Obama is perceived as weak from the jihadists seeking to destroy the United States, or as they call us, the big Satan, with Israel as the little Satan? Or is he?
Well, there's no question that the two top leaders in Iran, the Ayatollah Khamenei and President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, they both regard President Obama as weak. And the reason primarily is, well, there's several. One, because the U.S. economy is so weak. Two, because Obama's poll numbers are so low right now that he's politically weak. But also within the region, while President Obama has certainly done some things that are quite effective, like authorizing the takedown of Osama bin Laden, the Iranian regime sees the U.S. as trying to pull out our military forces from the Middle East as rapidly as possible, from Iraq by the end of this year, from Afghanistan by the end of next year. And the Iranian regime is reading this as weakness, as a sign that Obama and his team have no intention of any future wars in the region. And to that extent, they're probably right. But what in the novel, the Tehran Initiative, what I raise as the possibility at the core of the novel is this question. What if an American president, well-meaning though he may be, a president like the one we have or a future president, what if an American president miscalculates with regards to Iran? What if that president hesitates, waits too long, doesn't take decisive action to neutralize the Iranian threat, and Iran does in fact get nuclear weapons? What would we do at that point? What would Iran do? What would Israel do? And these are the questions that I think, you know, that I tried to weave into this new political thriller, the Tehran Initiative. But they're not fictional questions. They're very real, and they're as urgent as this week's headlines.
They certainly are, Joel. How should Americans prepare for what many believe is the inevitable, another attack on U.S. soil, and the growing threat of Sharia law actually already being adjudicated in our own country?
Well, I don't. I think that the main thing is leadership. I think the main issue is in our homes we need spiritual leadership, seeking the Lord Jesus Christ, walking with Him, teaching our children what the Scriptures say, living for Christ, imploring the Lord for revival for our country, a third great awakening, like we had a great spiritual awakening in the 18th century and in the 19th century. So we need spiritual, strong leadership in our homes, in the pulpits, that we would be walking faithfully with Jesus, because that's our greatest hope and defense as individuals, as churches, and as a nation. We also, however, need strong, principled, courageous leaders in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're not seeing this president give the type of leadership that would be necessary to protect the United States and our allies, namely Israel, but not only, in the Middle East, from Iran getting the bomb. But right now, we haven't seen the Republican presidential candidates step forward and show leadership either. Most of them have, with the exception of Congressman Ron Paul, have spoken with some wisdom and clarity on the Iran issue. But none of them have stepped forward yet and laid out a major policy proposal to deal with the Iran issue differently and more decisively than President Obama. And we need to be pushing and pressing the Republican contenders to be the next commander-in-chief. What would you do to defend America and to protect Americans and our allies from Iran getting nuclear weapons? How do we stop them? I think we need to press these candidates at the congressional, Senate, and presidential level.
And that actually was one of my questions for you today about our presidential candidates laying out a plan in support of Israel and defense against Iran and the threat of nuclear warfare. Joel, what would be your plan?
Well, let me say for a second there that I should qualify what I just said. All of the candidates on the Republican side for president have said basically reasonably good things, with the exception of Congressman Ron Paul. He, God bless him, he just is out to lunch on this issue, unfortunately. He has said that it doesn't really matter to him if Iran gets nuclear weapons, because he doesn't think that Iran is stupid enough or crazy enough to use them. And moreover, Congressman Paul said that he would end all U.S. military aid to Israel. The rest of them have said they would, you know, they realize that Iran is a serious threat. I think Speaker Gingrich and former Senator Rick Santorum have been the best on the issue, but honestly, none of them have really laid out a major policy proposal. Right now, I'm actually working behind the scenes with about a dozen Iran policy experts, former senior U.S. military generals and officials, and senior U.S. Intelligence officials, all former, to gather ideas on exactly how we can handle this threat. And I'm hoping in the next few weeks to just lay out those ideas myself, if none of the candidates are going to do it for us. So, but I think the key is that there's two issues. The key is the leadership on, we need regime change in Iran. You know, ultimately we need to say, the Ayatollah Khamenei and President Ahmadinejad are unfit to lead Iran. The Iranian people need to be free, and these are two genocidal dictators that need to be toppled. And secondly, we need to make clear that if Iran doesn't immediately stop all efforts on its nuclear program, that we put a credible military option on the table. There are steps that can be taken before a war, ramping up economic sanctions, covert operations, but we have to make it clear that there is a serious price for Iran moving forward on the nuclear weapons program. And as I lay out in this new novel, The Tehran Initiative, this is about an America that waits too long, that doesn't take any of these decisive actions, and Iran does in fact get the bomb. And at that point, only three logical answers or actions happen. Either Iran uses those nuclear weapons against us and Israel, or B, the United States takes preemptive military action against Iran, and I won't give away which scenario I follow in the Tehran Initiative, but none of them are pretty.
Well, Joel, that's all the time we have in our first segment today. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Joel Rosenberg, The Tehran Initiative. We'll have more with Joel next week on Testimony. Thank you so much, Joel. We look forward to speaking with you next week.
My pleasure. Thank you.
If you would like more information, you can visit our website at jensinebard.com. That's one word, JenSinebard.com. Or write to us at Testimony, P.O. Box 1333, Palm Desert, California, 92261. That's P.O. Box 1333, Palm Desert, California, 92261. I'm Jensine Bard. Please join us again for Testimony. He has been called the Nostradamus of our time, is an award-winning author of multiple fiction and non-fiction books, his latest being The Tehran Initiative, a political thriller that could easily be ripped from today's headlines and have been with his past writings, predicting events before they even happened. Eerie, as some would say, yes. Prophetic and biblically based, as others would say, most definitely. This Jew for Jesus has impacted this world politically, relationally, and in every way, having worked with some of today's greatest leaders. Having been profiled by every major publication, news, and radio network, and his ongoing philanthropy through his charitable organization he founded, the Joshua Fund, gives passion its feet in helping war-torn Israel and those suffering the aftermath of terrorism. Would you welcome back with me today from his offices in Washington, D.C., author, political strategist, philanthropist, and my honored guest, Mr. Joel Rosenberg. Joel, welcome back to Testimony.
Great to be with you. Thank you.
Joel, in part one of our conversation last week, you spoke about your amazing book, The Tehran Initiative, and the implications of this writing and what it means for all of us today. In this segment, Joel, I want to bring the listeners the more personal side of Joel Rosenberg. How you came to faith in Jesus Christ as a Jew, what this relationship has meant to you in your career, in your writings, and specifically in your life and that of your family. I would love for you to tell us that story, Joel, and then would you bring us up to date with where you see America today in the light of Middle East rumblings and what we as Americans need to be doing about it? Please, Joel, tell us your story.
Well, I appreciate that very much. To understand my story, you really have to understand my parents' story, because there's where the game-changing moment happened with my father and my mother several years before I came to faith. Now, my father's side of the family is Orthodox Jewish. My dad was born in Brooklyn as a first-generation American, but his family, his parents and grandparents and so forth, escaped out of anti-Semitic, fascist, czarist Russia in the early 1900s. My dad was born in 1939 in Brooklyn, was raised in this Orthodox Jewish home in Bedford-Stuyvesant, was bar mitzvahed. His first language, he says, was cursing. His second language was Yiddish. His third language was English. By the time he grew up and became an architect, he was an agnostic. He didn't know what he believed and didn't have a good experience in Brooklyn or in the synagogue or with his family. So he moved to Syracuse, New York, and met and fell in love with the woman that he would marry, that would eventually become my mother. My mom was raised in central New York by a single mother who had been divorced from her husband because he had tried to kill her with an axe. So it was a very sad situation in her family, raised in a nominal church but without ever hearing the gospel. Now, when my parents married, though they were both agnostics, but they really were seeking God. They were sure they were pretty sure there was a God. They just didn't know how to find him. And they began reading the Quran together. They read the Bhagavad Gita from India together. They read the Bible together. They didn't understand any of them. But it so happened that in 1973, they visited a church where some young couples who were born again happened to be sharing how they had met Jesus Christ and developed a personal relationship with God through faith in Jesus Christ. As they explained their testimonies, as they explained the scriptures, John 3:16, John 14:6, that Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life, and no one can come to the Father except through him, my mother's heart just leapt within her. She knew instantly this was true, and this is exactly what she was looking for. And when there was an opportunity to pray to receive Christ as her Savior at the end of the service, she did that, assuming my father would be right there too. Well, he wasn't convinced yet, but to his credit, he began to go to a small group Bible study with my mom, studying through the gospel according to Luke. And 6 months of studying the New Testament, particularly the book of Luke, my father came home one day and said, "I believe that Jesus is the Messiah, and I've given my life to him." Wow. Well, this was the game changer in my family, because you have to understand, my father had never heard of a Jewish person coming to faith in Jesus. He thought he was the first Jewish person since the Apostle Paul who believed that. He'd never met someone like this, never heard of this. This was hugely, this was just a big, huge change for him. But I, over the next few years, that was 1973, over the next few years, I began to see their lives change in significant and positive ways. And by 1975, at the age of 8, I realized that I needed a Savior and that Jesus was the Messiah, and I gave my life to him. And that really set us into motion as a family, pursuing Jesus because he had pursued us. And, you know, in 1973 and 75, there weren't that many Jewish believers in Jesus on the planet. When I was born in 1967, maybe there were 2,000 Jewish people on the entire globe who believed that Jesus was the Messiah and is. But today there are an estimated 250,000 to 300,000 Jewish believers in Jesus, including 15,000 in Israel alone. So wow. God is doing a great thing among the Jewish people, waking us up, opening our eyes, and I've been very blessed to be part of this great movement of God.
Well, for those of you who may have just tuned in, you're listening to Joel Rosenberg, author of his latest, The Tehran Initiative, a New York Times bestseller. And we have Joel sharing with us today his personal testimony. In part one, you'll be able to hear a little bit more about his book, The Tehran Initiative. But Joel, please go ahead, continue. Tell us about your walk of faith with Jesus Christ.
Well, you know, as I continued to grow in my faith in high school and then in college, I got involved in Campus Crusade for Christ at Syracuse University. I learned how to share my faith more effectively than I'd done before. Was discipled by a wonderful pastor from the nation of India. He discipled my wife and me and really took us deep into the Word of God and showed us how to love international students, particularly Muslims and Chinese and Indian students, with the love of Christ, and really showed us how to walk out our faith in a deeper way. And I remember Dr. Koshy was his name. Dr. Koshy used to say to us, Joel, Lynn, these serve a prayer hearing and a prayer answering God, a wonder-working God. And sometimes we needed English-to-English translation for that. But it was Joel, Lynn, we serve a prayer hearing and a prayer answering God, a wonder-working God. And over the years, I've had this opportunity to work for a number of U.S. and Israeli leaders, as you described earlier. And then in the year 2001, I felt moved to write my first political thriller with the gospel woven into it. That novel was The Last Jihad. Mm-hmm. That spent 11 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list, hit number one on Amazon. And I was able to share my faith with almost 20 million people through 160 radio and TV interviews that I gave during the course of that book tour. Set into motion what now is my ninth book. We've sold over 2.5 million copies, all of which have the gospel woven clearly within it. The people who come to faith in Jesus Christ in the book, it's very clear how their spiritual journey goes. So I'm not just trying to write political thrillers. I'm trying to write evangelistic works where people can not only read these books, but share them with people who don't know Christ and thus be giving them the gospel.
You know, in earlier interviews, I noticed you talked about the power of storytelling. Do you feel you've been called by God for such a time as this, Joel, through your writings and the power of a story to be a watchman in the wall for us in these last days? And do you feel that we are in the last days?
Well, there's no question that I feel that I know that we're in the last days. Jesus was asked, you know, for one sign by the disciples that would be give them a sense of when we would be in the last days before his return. And he gave them a whole list of signs, and the prophets and the apostles. And when you look at that list, we're in that. You know, wars, rumors of wars, persecution, economic troubles, natural disasters, earthquakes, the spread of the gospel. And I think the super sign, the one that's the most distinctive in this time, is the rebirth of the state of Israel. and Jewish people coming back to the Holy Land to live in Israel after centuries of exile. That was prophesied in the Bible to happen in the last days. It has happened. We saw it in 1948, and it continues on today. So we know we're in the last days. Now the question is, as we get closer to the return of Jesus, will he be happy and proud of us when he sees us face to face, those of us who are born again, or will we have disobeyed him? And when it comes to the issue of the Great Commission, we need to go, ye therefore, and make disciples of all nations, including Israel, including Iran, including Libya, and all the countries of the Middle East, as well as our own country and other countries, because this is what God has called us to do. The signs tell us we're getting closer to the return of Jesus. We don't know exactly when he's coming, but we don't need to know exactly. We just need to know that because we're getting closer, the question is, are we living in a way that we will hear from Jesus' lips one day, "Well done, my good and faithful servant"? So for my wife, Lynn, and our four boys, we live in such a way that we want to do everything we can through the books, through our own personal lives, through the ministry that we began, the Joshua Fund, anything and everything we can do to make disciples, to proclaim the gospel, to mobilize and encourage the church to get out there and live the Great Commission and seek to fulfill it in our generation, because Jesus is coming soon, and he's going to be evaluating us in part, not for our salvation, if Jesus said, if you love me, you will obey me, and we don't want to be found anything less than faithful by his grace when he comes back, which may be sooner than most people think.
Jill, this is such encouraging words, and you've answered so many of my questions already about what you would say to the fatalist who doesn't feel the need to concern himself with anything outside of his own little world or the U.S. borders. You've addressed that beautifully. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Joel Rosenberg, joelrosenberg.com, joshuafund.net, and flashtrafficblog.wordpress.com. You can learn more about how to get in touch with Joel and be an effective witness for Jesus Christ right where you are. God bless you, Joel, and thank you for being with us today on Testimony.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's our honor. If you would like more information, you can visit our website at jensinebard.com. That's one word, jensinebard.com. Or write to us at Testimony, P.O. Box 1333, Palm Desert, California, 92261. That's P.O. Box 1333, Palm Desert, California, 92261. I'm Jensine Bard. Please join us again for Testimony.